Welcome to the Action Sports Podcast. This podcast is designed to help you get out and ride more no matter what skill level you are, because you share the same passion as we do for the coolest sports on the planet. So stay tuned to learn from the leaders in action sports. Here's your host, Colton Passon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Action Sports Podcast. Today, I have another freaking awesome guest. Because I say that because every guest that comes on the podcast is awesome. And I'm always excited to talk to them. I'm always excited to learn from them, hear their stories, and then share it with you guys. And today's guest is, he's been living a dream that a lot of us have, especially in the hard enduro world, where this guest has actually been overseas. For those that don't live over in Europe, this gentleman has raced multiple times over in Europe from Canada, and he's actually raced with some pretty big names in the enduro world. And I'm really stoked to hear more about those races, or just get to understand a little bit more how it actually happened and learn more from him. And then he'll also help us out and understand a lot more about, our big topic, sponsorship, because this guy's been doing this for over two decades. He's been racing and competing and just crushing it. A lot of people, when I say his name, you guys will actually recognize him and probably have already been following him. I know for me, he's fairly new, but I have a lot of friends that I've actually been friends with him for quite a while, and that's all because of hard enduro. So, but I just want to introduce Shane Cuthbertson. Is that how you say your last name? Cuthbertson?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. That's the easiest way to do it.
Right. So welcome to the podcast, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Cool. So at the very beginning, I like to introduce or just give you that small introduction, but I want you to give us a brief history of growing up in the industry, or when you started. Because there's some people that have started at the age of two. There's other people that didn't start till they were 16 when mom and dad kind of gave in, broke and gave in and let them get a bike or start riding. Other people didn't have the chance until they were 18 years old. So let's hear a brief background of who you are, like where you came from. And then we'll get into really the meat and potatoes of the podcast.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no. So my start was actually without a motor. When I was quite young, probably 5 or 6 years old, I got into BMX racing. And so I was really, really involved with that. Like my parents were very supportive of me. So I was racing a lot, had the opportunities to do a bunch of world championships. Wow. Actually even went to Japan when I was 9 years old for the world championships in BMX. And so over time though, with my ability, I became frustrated because they didn't really particularly have a proper class for me to fit in. So I would always have to go and race against riders that were, you know, 2-3 years older than I was, just so that I kind of fit in. And so as a young rider, that just frustrated the heck out of me. And eventually when I was 13, I just ended up calling it quits. I had just raced too much. I was getting frustrated because I didn't have a great competition pool where I was to race that was actually like my ability. Instead of going to race and a bunch of adult pro guys who were kicking my butt, that was no fun. I wanted to win, right? So that kind of burnt me out on that. So I took a little bit of time off, and then the competition bug came back, and I decided, okay, well, I like two wheels, and let's just strap a motor on that thing. And so I asked for a dirt bike, and my parents obliged and got me my first motorcycle. And so that kind of started in around 14 years old, started riding dirt bikes, did a lot of just camping and riding in the forestry with my family, friends. And then it's time to race. I'm good enough. It's just kind of what's born and bred into me, I guess, is the competition part of it. So I started racing and progressed through the ranks pretty quickly.
Racing motocross?
I raced, it was racing, like we call them like hair scrambles and cross country events. So off-road events. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So progressed through to 17 years old, turned pro, or, you know, became, yeah, I'm not, as I say pro, I want to be careful how I'm phrasing that. I race in the pro class.
Right.
So a professional racer that was doing it for a living or anything like that. And so, yeah, through that, then met just a ton of my friends that I'm still friends with now. And we had this this awesome group of riders that we just kept on, you know, pushing each other and progressing. And, you know, I feel like that really helped us kind of get to top level. Like it was insane. There was probably 20 or 25 of us growing up that were like heavy into this. And I was super lucky that I had that group of riders to hang out with and learn the craft. And even to this day, we're all in our 40s, mid 40s, 50s and stuff like that. But even to this day, like those guys are just like some pretty rad riders. Like it's amazing what they can do. And if they came back to competition or shape, you know, they could give the young lads, a little bit of a shakedown and some competition still. That's kind of where it all started for me. And of course, along the way, got married, had kids, and then dirt biking kind of went away for, 8-10 years while life happened. And then when my first son was born, I was like, oh man, I gotta get in better shape. Like I'd gained like 40 pounds from what I had been, and I'd always kind of been a heavy set guy, but I was even heavier than I was smoking, and I just was like, ah, this is no good. So I'm like, I got some real responsibilities now. So I ended up just getting in shape, dropped a lot of weight, like 40-50 pounds, quit smoking, and then got a bike again. And then I was like, okay, well, I got some spare time on my hands, maybe I'll just go race. So I went and raced, and the first race I raced, I like won, and it was so easy. I was like, oh, that was really weird because I haven't done this in a long time. So that kind of sparked the interest back into the racing thing for me. And here I am, like, you know, kind of out of the prime, I guess. I'm 28, 29 years old at this point in time. But the good thing about that is I had the means to do the racing that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I started again, just competing locally and doing well. And then met a friend of mine, his name is Lee Freiberger. And he kind of was like, hey man, like you've kind of conquered the local scene. Like you're good enough. You should come ride the International 6-Day Enduro for us for Canada.
Oh, cool.
So that kind of sparked my interest in international competitions. I was like, okay, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. 6 days of riding, like off-road, you know.
Where was it at? Country.
It was in Slovakia.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was in 2005. So I went over and there and did that. And then, you know, right away, I was hooked on the 6 days. And then the next year, was a really big 6 days, especially for like Canadian riders. It was in New Zealand, so everybody wanted to go to New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
So I used the Slovakia event as preparation for New Zealand. I wanted to kind of be on the top team. Like we had, like, it's called a trophy team, so that's all the top riders in the nation that get selected to be a part of that team and compete against the world's best riders. So I ended up making it on that team, and we sent like 30 riders or something like that over to New Zealand. It was a huge contingent. It was really awesome. And we did pretty well for a Canadian team. We're not even close and comparable to the United States or some of the larger countries, but I think we ended up finishing 12th, maybe out of 25 countries or something like that. So we're right in the middle, which was pretty cool.
To touch on that real quick, and I don't mean to interrupt, but like this isn't the first time I've heard this, like the comparison between the Canada and United States. But why do you think there is that difference in the class of riding? Because down here, I mean, down in the United States, like there's some really, really good riders, Cody Webb, Colton Haker, and those guys. But it seems like those guys, like there's people like them up in Canada as well, but maybe I haven't seen them in person, so I don't know what the real big difference is. Hopefully I'm going to be going to Roar in Pennsylvania.
Cool.
And Cody Webb's going to be there. Shelby Turner's going to be there.
And Tristan Hart is a big one of ours right now.
Yeah.
So he's been battling him and Cody back and forth. So
okay. So what's the class difference here?
Yeah, I think it's just the population thing. Like, we don't have a very large population in Canada. Like, you know, I think we have 25 million people or something like that in all of Canada. So, right. And then our climate's not great either. It's not suited to riding all year round. You know, like, for instance, I live in Alberta, which is just above Montana. And like, we really have a 3-month racing window. We race from June to September, and that's it. So we're kind of limited on what we can do. We do ride all year round, most of the time in the snow and the cold and stuff like that. But we're changing our craft constantly instead of just kind of being in it, I think. And so I think that's part of it. And then the other thing is too, like, is just the size of the country is so big. So to have, like, that's how the U.S. is set up. Like, there's like basically Western events and Eastern events. But you guys' population is so big out east, like there's thousands of riders that go to a GNCC. And then in the west, there's thousands of riders that go to Work Series or Hare and Hounds or Hard Enduro stuff. And here we just, like, we got, like, in Western Canada, which is basically Alberta and BC, we have like 500 riders that are interested in racing, right? So you might get to like the biggest event that we have, you'd have 250 riders. And that's, I think, probably the difference between. And then we have our federations. I don't want to get too political or anything like that, but it's tough to work it with the federation as well. They're based out of out east. Most of the, and there's a lot of good competitors in Eastern Canada, but Western Canada kind of gets left behind, and it's just not it's been kind of just a revolving thing with our federation that we just can't quite figure out how to have them supporting the world-class events that we need to go to kind of become, like, you know, one of those powerhouse nations, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. was like that at one point in time, actually, too, until like Kurt Caselli came along and his dad. And they really made a huge push for like their international 6-day enduro team to like be like the best riders to go. Because usually what it was just, and that's how it is generally in Canada, like whoever could afford it will go, you know. So it's not a selection criteria. It's whoever has the money can go. It's not necessarily the best rider. So, right. But, that's slowly changing. Like this year, we're sending a really, really good team, probably our strongest team ever, from Canada to the International 6-Day Enduros in Italy. Good. So hopefully times are changing.
Yeah, though, that'd be awesome. Yeah. I know Shelby was talking about that, and I kind of depending if Italy opens it up is last I heard. So
we'll
see, right? Well, that's cool. Yeah. That's a really cool background that you have, Shane. And sharing with that, like the progression from BMX racing to taking some time off, getting into racing on bikes, taking some more time off to spend with family and kind of reset, and then get that little bug inside of you again to go try it out. And I mean, look where that took you. It took you crazy or great places pretty quickly. I'm assuming within that time, also you went to Erzberg and you went over to the Romaniacs. Like, you did those races, right?
Yeah. 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 And basically, again, so I just, after I did the 2 6-days that I did, then I kind of sparked that international flavor. And then we are kind of, you know, I was kind of like, okay, well, how do we gain attention? Like, how do we get the support and sponsorship to be going over to Europe to do these like bucket list races and stuff like that? And so we kind of found a niche within the industry, because social media wasn't really huge back then. So what we were doing was we were really going hard after like being able to get into magazines and being able to get on some websites and stuff like that. So we were really liaising with all these different publications in within Canada, US. And so we were able to get some really good publication, and our supporters were like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll help you like get a bike over there and gear and support and all that, because like it's like free advertising for us. Mm-hmm. It's like a no brainer, and you guys are coming over here, it doesn't really cost us anything. So me and three buddies ended up making this team. I was the rider, two of the other guys were mechanics, the other guy was kind of the manager, and we kind of all just worked together. We're all working guys, so we kind of just split duties and stuff like that to make it happen. And I ended up going, okay, well, how are we going to get the best bang for a buck now? And then there was Erzberg, right? Like these huge races that were kind of coming about, and people were like, with the internet and stuff like that, they were able to see what was going on. And then there was Romaniacs, and there was Last Man Standing. So mm-hmm. I started kind of getting into that, and we put together some efforts into that. And that's how I ended up getting to those races and experiencing them. And
right.
And, so yeah, so since then that's kind of stuck with me. You know, I was kind of finished with that sort of in around, like I'd say 2011, 2012, and then started focusing on some other stuff that it was like local to Canada. But that kind of spurred my involvement with Red Bull doing some promoting harder events then. So that's kind of how things kind of have gone and evolved over time. So kind of gone from a rider to promoting them and helping Red Bull put on some really cool events here in Canada.
Yeah. That's awesome. You have a pretty cool story background, and like I already mentioned that, a fun story from racing to now where you're helping with holding events and you're helping with getting more rider attraction, helping get more, what do you want to call it, more attention to Canada racing, getting racers more known. I know Tristan, he's definitely moved up in the ranks from working really heavy with SRT to now he's factory KTM. Like, he's done a really good job with that. And without people like you basically pioneering or working behind the scenes and getting the name out there, getting the relationship started, it wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's cool. And that's where we want to go in our with this podcast and kind of break down how that's worked, and how that continually works. And you've created what, two jobs essentially, or two companies essentially out mm-hmm. of that. I want to retract just for one sec and talk about your childhood and kind of get a little bit, see if we can't sneak in some experience while you were racing BMX. Did you work with any sponsors to travel around or to go to Japan and do local racing? Did you have sponsors at that time as well?
Yeah, I did have sponsors. But, you know, I think most of it was all through my mom had coordinated all of that. You know, like I would get bikes and stuff like that for free in parts, but most of it was just more of a family thing. Like we would do fundraisers to raise enough funds to fly us over there and be gone and have enough parts and stuff like that. So okay. It was pretty organic, like sort of small town kind of deal, but it was really wicked. I mean, it was a trip that I'll never forget, even though it was quite a long time ago. So.
Right. So you were one of those boys that were knocking doors and saying, hey, do you want to buy some candy bars from me? Oh, what's the candy bars for? And like, well, I want to go race my BMX bike. So you're like, okay.
Yeah. And it's totally like that. Like, you know, probably there's so many people with this story. Like my mom was super involved in my racing back then. And then that transpired into her actually running the track where we lived. And so there was a facility for me and we're always there. And then you're riding more and you're connecting with, you know, the local public. And so you develop all those relationships and that all kind of stems to, oh, like, hey, this little kid wants to go to Japan. Cool. Here's 10 bucks, buddy. Here you go. And you know, that's kind of how we did it. It was just like that.
Yeah. That's different. People need to know that this was Shane's in his 40s. So he's about almost 15 years older than I am. That puts him literally in the, Man, that puts you in the late 70s and early 80s when you were doing that, right?
Yeah.
And so there was no internet at all.
No.
There was no GoFundMes at all. Like none of that existed. It was literally, he was knocking doors, talking to people, wearing retro clothing, you know, still listening to AC/DC and those kind of bands.
Yeah, cool.
It was just a different era, definitely compared to what we have today. So, mm-hmm. I mean, a total OG working the system, trying to figure out how he can actually make it someplace and look where it's taken him. You know, you've raced against some of the top names. You're friends with a lot of these top guys. And that's just stemmed from working hard as a kid, wanting something different than all the other kids that played basketball, football, soccer. Though you may have played the sports, you wanted something more, and something else kind of took your passion or was passionate to you versus those things. But I love the fact that you share your family's part of that, because that's a big thing. I think without families, we wouldn't be doing a lot of the stuff we do, and we wouldn't be able to share the passion we have. We'd be doing it by ourselves, and it's no fun to do it by yourself. It's pretty lonely.
And that's what keeps me going now. Like, I have two boys, one's 18 and one's 15. And that's my sole purpose in life right now. Like, my goal is to just be able to kind of hang in there with them. And when we go riding, like, they've come to the point where, like, we're almost all the same speed now. And it's just like riding with my buddies, you know? And that's awesome. Like, I get to spend time with them, and they're kind of that carrot that keep me young, right? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm still competitive. It's not like I want to beat them down, but I can't let them have bragging rights either, you know? So.
Yeah, no, I've seen, like, if you go to Shane's Instagram page, you could go back to the very beginning and start coming forward. You see his kids progress. It's fun to watch how they were getting better and better, how they were training on trials. At least your oldest boy, got a lot of videos on him. Yeah. And progressing and learning more and actually starting to compete, and then riding with dad, competing with dad. Like, for any father that rides and races, like, that's something they love. And it's cool that you're able to do that with your boy.
Yeah.
So, boys now, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So moving forward and like back to, or coming towards 2005 and this time, you work with some, you said you were working with a group of people. Who were your first sponsors that you actually started to work with when you got back into racing after your family was established?
There was basically like a local motorcycle shop that we had here. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, it was like anything. They're super prevalent in the off-road scene and where I live. So that's where you kind of tend to migrate. Everybody's riding those types of bikes. They were KTMs at that point in time. And so, okay, this is the best bike to ride. So everybody would get, you know, the KTM, for instance. And so I started doing that. And then, you know, as I started to get more competitive, I'm like, hey, wait, this is getting expensive. So, you know, I started to look like, how am I going to get gear? How am I going to get oil? How am I going to get tires? Again, this is long before social media. So out the resumes went, you know, even, you know, I'm like 30 years old, 35 years old, sending resumes around to companies trying to get support and sponsorship. And then, you know, you get better at it. And then, okay, it's a little bit more professional proposals. And then you get the balls to actually like pick up the phone and call somebody. Just going to dealerships and meeting people and that type of thing. So in Canada is a little bit different, like on sort of the medium level sponsorship. If we have a lot of distributors in Canada, instead of like going direct to say Dunlop, for instance, you have to go through a distributor. So I ended up working and pitching the idea to one of our local distributors here, who carried multiple lines of product, probably, you know, hundreds, 200 product lines. And, you know, I just happened to catch him, you know, and kind of, he liked my story and what I wanted to do. And, you know, we started working together to put that program together so that I could start to do, you know, some of the larger events that I wanted to and still be able to afford it all. And before I knew it, I had gear, I had tires, I had oil and all that stuff. And I stayed in touch with him, and we kind of tried to work together so that I could promote his brands and, mm-hmm. and people would see that in the off-road arena, you know, which a lot of people haven't seen before, and kind of start to bring more of a professional approach to the racing, rather than like sometimes you'll see like some off-road riders, sometimes they don't care if you got a matching set of jersey and pants. It's just, you just need some clothes on, so you're not going to get super muddy all day long kind of thing. So that's kind of where, you know, I started, just trying to bring it a little bit more professional and get as much exposure I could for them. And
that was winning races or at least getting close to the podium. I think a lot of people overlook like the results as well. Like, yeah, you may not be one top 1, 2, 3 and showing your face up there, but there's actually let's say a third of the people that follow these races may actually look at the results, and if your name pops up there, they very may well hit social media. They very may well look at, see who you are. And then next time, if they're return to these events and keep attending these events, that name will pop up to them again. So being present, and I love the little tidbit you said in there, being professional, like that was important to you to be professional as a representative of that brand. So of that dealership. Now, did you have graphics and stuff to kind of showcase or bring the name out to the spectators? Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And we would do a lot of like even really cool things. Like, you know, we would, you know, try to touch base with our sponsors throughout the year and say, hey, like, oh, hey, by the way, we got in this magazine, or we got coverage on this website, okay. You know, or what have you. Like, still that social media wasn't even around at that point.
Right, so it's different.
That's old school, but it's still things you can do to this day. Like, we would often do a year-end wrap up, and we would, so that basically we would show like, hey, this is the demographic we're in. This is how many people, you know, this magazine that we got in is reaching. This is how many hits this website is getting, and kind of wrap it all up for them. So at the end of the year, they can say, oh, these guys are actually doing some work for us, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should consider them again for next year, or maybe we can consider them for improvements in the support package or what have you. Right. So that's something you always have to kind of keep in the back of your mind is, you know, you have to become creative and you have to make yourself different from what everybody else is offering.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just doing a social media post every once in a while, well, like what else can you get some sort of a personal touch on that so these people know, right? Maybe it's even a phone call. Like, people forget about phones these days, but sometimes it's, you know, that's kind of the best, or a Zoom or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of the new age, and connecting with these sponsors on the personal levels, it's a pretty big deal. They will learn a lot more about you if they get to see your face and talk with you, you know, even if just briefly for 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then even giving the feedback, hey, let's say Recluse, for example, you're running a Recluse clutch in your bike and you're riding it and all of a sudden it just blows to pieces and you're like, what the heck? So you come back to them and say, hey, this is what happened. This is where I was at. This is the conditions. The oil was this. Like, you're able to give a feedback to a manufacturer, and it's not just coming at the manufacturer saying, hey, your product is crap. It's no, hey, what happened? Why did this happen? Like, what are we going to do so we can improve this? Cause I need this. This is a good product. What do I need to do to push so we can actually improve this? Yeah. So I love how you talked about the fact that this is a relationship. This is a give and take relationship where you're given the feedback and you're receiving the feedback. You're helping them improve their product. They're helping you with the product. So don't take it as a gimme, 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 but take it as, hey, what can I do for you? And this is one of those strong things. And I love that you pointed that out. That's so true. That's so true.
Yeah.
So working with brands and companies, I guess you've actually started up your own brand as a coach. Let's turn it on the perspective of the business. How are you now looking at riders as a business owner or sponsoring people? Like, what are you looking for in the sponsor a rider?
Like, for me, I just want to, you know, I look at people, I want to have like a good ambassador. So I'm not necessarily looking for the fastest rider out there. obviously social media is a big thing. So you want to have somebody that's recognizable on social media. Mm-hmm. And you know, conducts themselves accordingly, I should mm-hmm. say. You know, like sometimes I'll see a lot of some people on social media, they just love to get into it and voice their opinions and kind of have that entitlement thing, and it goes over and over and over again. And so something like that, you know, that would really turn me off, for instance. You know, I want somebody that's really well respected in the community. And especially in my business, it was kind of a local grassroots type business, right? So, you know, that's what's important to me, is to find those people within the local community that everybody can kind of relate to and go, yeah, that guy's an awesome dude, or mm-hmm. you know, this lady like really all goes out of her way to spend time with you or whatever it is. So for me, I think that's important. For sure. And then, yeah, I think probably just the same thing that I try to do with my own partners in the company. So for instance, I partnered with GasGas for this year, and I've kind of been part of that KTM group companies, over 20 years, I guess.
Yeah, you've been KTM Husqvarna. Yeah.
I first started riding KTM, then Husaberg.
Yep.
Husqvarna, now to GasGas, right? So, you know, I talk to them on a regular basis and try to develop those relationships. And the more we do it, the more easier it becomes. It's not like I'm taking up too much of their time or really imposing on them too much. And they feel they can do the same. They can say, hey, Shane, like, oh, hey, we got an event. We'd love for you to come. What do you think? Or, you know, that type of thing. And so, you know, I'd love to have people that if I was supporting people through the company that are the same way. You know, just kind of throwing ideas back and forth, help me help you and vice versa. Right.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I see a lot of value in that. You know, moving, like it's been said on the podcast a few times, where like when you're trying different products and figuring out what works for you, like there's something to say when you do purchase it or, buy that product firsthand and know without asking for that sponsorship, like you can work with the business a lot more as well. So Shane here, he actually owns Rad 2.0, which is a coaching service. So if let's put an example out there. If somebody comes to you and wants to be sponsored by you, I mean, first and foremost, you're telling me that one, they need to be on social media and they actually need to have somewhat of a following. Do you have a number, like kind of what you look at for followers?
I don't. I really don't. Because I've seen people with like 5,000, 6,000 followers and you know, where I feel like, oh, they're not that great of a follow, or they're really posting for the wrong reasons, I would say. And then I see people with 500 followers who are genuine, you know, mm-hmm. follows and, you know, really they're just trying to do their thing. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's a numbers game really for me.
Okay, good. I wanted you to point that out because that was something that I've had in my back of my head with a lot of companies. Like, yeah, there's some people that have 200,000 followers and there's some people that have, like you said, 500 followers. And the social media people looking at the interactions, the genuine interactions, the comments, like that's cool. They can see comments that you're making. They can see how you're interacting with people. Are you representing the brand properly? Are you representing yourself as a professional and then also helping? I think guiding people is huge doing that. So come back to the coaching service. When somebody's approaching you and saying, hey, I want to be sponsored by you, I strongly believe that there's a cost to what Shane has as a coach. And he said, this is what it's going to cost for me to coach you. First time you've been through this program, if you buy it, you can also start working with them. When you put your own money into it and your own investment at the very beginning, and you see the value of it, you can then turn around and take that knowledge and pass it on to somebody else. Like, hey, Shane just helped me out a ton, cost this amount of money, but it was worth X. Like, it's invaluable. And so then they start working at an angle where they're bringing more clients to you, and you're like, hey, this guy's actually helping me out. Sponsorship. Like, that's a deal that couldn't happen. And it does happen. I think that happens pretty regularly when you start doing that. You bring in more clients, more help, more services.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, like, and that's all sort of, you know, trying to build that endemic following where, you know, like, it costs a lot of money to do the marketing and, oh, yeah. You know, and there's so many different avenues, so finding the right avenue is tough. So definitely if you have somebody within your team that can help you, you know, spread the word and really promote you that way, then that's invaluable, really, you know. So yeah, definitely hit it on the head. That's definitely, you know, something that would be something significant a rider could bring. Okay. That would, you know, really show their value to the company for sure.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're sharing that. That's a proper way to approach these. So yeah. let's take that approach and with Rad 2.0 and with Shane as an individual, how you were able to start cultivating and working with Red Bull, because Red Bull is a huge international company, super big. And so we, just so you know, in the Facebook group, we held a poll a little while ago about if you could pick one company to be represented by or to sponsor with, what would that be? The top ones were literally GoPro, Red Bull, Monster.
Yeah.
Top three. Yeah. Red Bull is this, that big company. And for you to work with them is fantastic. It's a dream that a lot of people have. So let's talk about how you alluded to it earlier in working, getting your name out there for one in the races across, you know, over in Europe and stuff that Red Bull is putting on. But let's talk about how you've now changed to working with them as a sponsor, because are you considered a sponsored athlete with them as well, or just as a individual holding events?
Yeah, just as an individual holding event. So a lot of times they'll call me like their race director, for instance.
Okay, that's a good name.
So they do that because you know, Red Bull's a massive company and they don't have people within their offices that know everything about every single sport, right? So you bring, and all the offices are different, right? There's the Canadian offices, there's US offices, there's offices all over the world. So they're not going to have somebody in-house that knows everything about every type of event that they want to promote. So here in Western Canada, how it all really started for me with Red Bull was like, it was almost like kind of a fluke, but, and I'm super happy it was. Yeah, right. I'm really stoked to be working with them. So I had got, so back in my competition days, Enduro Cross started coming along, like, you know, everything like Cody Webb and Colton Baker and Taddy Blazusiak and all those guys. So I'm like, yeah, I got to try my hand at that. And I ended up building a track at our local facility. And because I needed something better to practice on than just going to the woods and smashing over a tree or smashing over a rock here and there, which is basically all we had before. I needed like a closed course track that, you know, I could get my heart rate at 160, 170, 180, 200, whatever we ride at, and kind of feel that feeling of having to constantly hit obstacles and try to do, you know, 5-10 laps type thing. So anyways, I organized a volunteer thing, built this track. And then, so I was training at it and I just riding at it and Red Bull happened to be there for a KTM bike demo, 1 week and noticed this track down in the bottom of our local motocross facility. And they're like, hey, who built this thing? And they're like, yeah, it was Shane and a bunch of his volunteer people. And sure enough, they contacted me and like, hey, you'd be interested in doing an event with us? I'm like, yep. Heck yeah. Like,
that is cool.
What do you want from me? So I think actually the first year we just put it together. I pretty much just did everything for free. Like I wasn't looking for anything. I was just stoked that Red Bull was interested in like doing a local event with like, and just for me to be able to showcase that to all the, my buddies and people that were involved in the sports that, you know, that I love and grew up doing. So yeah, we created this, it's called Red Bull Rocks and Logs. And so the first one went off great. And they're like, let's do another one and another one. So we ended up doing it for 6 years. And every year we would completely tear the existing track down and start from scratch and build a big brand new track. And the track has got a really cool picturesque view behind like the city skyline of downtown Calgary right in the background. So it's really awesome. And that's kind of a catch for this facility. And
that's cool.
So I did that and started developing relationships with Red Bull. And then they're like, hey, we want to do something better than Rocks and Logs. I'm like, okay, I'm in. Like, let's do it. Like, yeah, they're like way bigger and better. I'm like, okay. Like, so, so we created Red Bull Outliers, it's called, in 2019. And we pulled half of the event off. It was a 2-day thing. One day was downtown Calgary. So we actually built it like an enduro cross track right in the heart of downtown Calgary. So most of the riders were just stoked to be riding in the middle of the city, you know. It's quite a big downtown that we have here in Calgary. And then the next day was going to be, the location changed several times, but it ended up going back out to the Badlands is what I would say. So it's like where the dinosaurs and stuff like that all are. We have a place called Dinosaur Provincial Park. So this location that we have, a good friend of mine has access to some private land there, and it's just super gnarly. And we actually had held 2 events out there once. It was called Extinction. So I talked Red Bull into hey, let's go out here and check this thing out. They came out and they're like, well, like, this is unbelievable. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, let's get this thing done. So that was supposed to be the second day. And it was end of September. And then we just got a huge snowstorm came through the night, man, between the Calgary event and the Dinosaur Provincial Park event. So it was just too dangerous for us to hold events. So we had everybody out there tromping around in 2 feet of snow, and we had to cancel it. And then 2020 didn't work, COVID. And we're back on for this year. August 21st, we're going to have an event. It's not going to be downtown Calgary just because of crowds and stuff like that, but it's going to be back out in the Badlands, like the actual hard enduro extreme part of it.
Okay.
And so we're pretty stoked on that. And then we have big, big plans for 2022. So yeah, and that's kind of how I've become involved with Red Bull. And like, yeah, the relationship just keeps on growing. And, you know, we're building more and more trust. And all of a sudden I'm talking with people that are higher and higher in Red Bull. And so, yeah, for me, I'm just like, it's like a dream come true. It's just so awesome for me to be able to work with them and bring like these types of events to like the local population that I have here and share with everybody. So
yeah, that's awesome. And you've even gotten some attention on a few news places. I've seen you on a news or I don't remember the channel, what it was called. It was on YouTube, but you've been featured in some articles and talked about. You actually appeared on some like a morning show. It looked like a morning show or afternoon show, I'm not sure what it was. You've done Dirt Bike News, you've been in there, and then you even did looks like back in the day you even tried your hand, or maybe you and some buddies tried your hand at maybe like a little video series called Dirt TV.
Yeah,
back right in your Husaberg
back in the day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was kind of fun video to watch.
Yeah. So again, that's all just like, hey, let's do something different. And how do we showcase ourselves differently? You know, and so we are trying all kinds of different things here and there. And even now, even though I'm like an old dude I still race, more or less, just because my kids are there and I'm like, well, what the heck am I going to do? So I'm going to go race. And so I still need people to help out, you know. Sure. Like I need some gear and I need some bikes, and so now my work with Red Bull helps highlight that, like,
oh yeah,
it's even better than it did before. Like I get to go on the news in the mornings and in the afternoons, and then they do all these interviews with me all over the world. And so, you know, that's bringing value to them and it's bringing value to me, and it's kind of like a win-win, right? So
absolutely.
So, yeah, all these little things, they all add up over time.
Yeah, that's cool. That's fantastic. And I want to showcase that to make a point of a lot of people don't know like the long-term goal. Like they don't have a long-term goal. They just want to race, type of thing. Right. But there's a whole lot more you can do. Figure out a way to grow the industry. Shane did it with building, you know, helping out his community. Started out in the community, and then he started to grow it a little bit more and more. I've had other people on the podcast, same thing, where they started doing these little things. They went from videography perspective, and then they actually created more events and started doing this. So now there's some industries that are starting to grow again because of it.
Yeah.
So there's definitely room for growth in our industry. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, it's one of those things, like I didn't really figure it out until, I was in my 40s. Like, honestly, like this Rad 2.0 has just kind of come along like super slow. Like, I knew this was my passion, riding dirt bikes, and you know, because I can't stop thinking about it ever, you know, like even during my daily regular job type stuff, I'm just like, okay, I'm looking in the magazine or looking on the internet or whatever it is, you know, it's just constantly in my mind. So I'm like, okay, this is what like moves me, you know, and I always wanted to do something in that space, but I just couldn't quite figure out how to do it. And I was super pumped to kind of finally parlay this sort of promotion of events and coaching of athletes and kind of giving back to the community into this company now, which, like, it's almost to the point where, and I've grown it to, and it's only been 2 years, so I've almost grown it to the point where I'm like, okay, well, geez, I don't know if I need to do this regular job anymore, you know, like it's so close. And for me, it's like, that's what I'm super passionate, and that's what I actually want to do. I still got to put food on the table for everybody, so I still have my other regular job. So, you know, it's one of those things. But yeah, definitely, like, you got to chase your dreams. That's what I always tell people. Like, if you're passionate about something, and you know, there's gonna be a way you can spin it one way or the other to make it work. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't give up on it. So
absolutely. I absolutely agree. Shane, this has been really fun. I've enjoyed your talent, and talking and cultivating a relationship with companies and with our industry. And it's super awesome to hear that. Last question I have before we finish up, out of respect to your time, is what are some good habits, some new sponsor riders or people that want to become sponsored? What are some habits they could actually start working on today that they could, you know, as a coach, what can they do to work towards being a sponsored rider?
I think, again, like I just keep on going back to community. Like, for me, that's one of the most important things, like being engaged in your local community. You know, whether you go to a track or whether you're riding off road, maybe it's helping to do some land advocacy or supporting your local dirt bike clubs, or your even just your local dealers and stuff like that. You know, like those people are all right in that area that you live in, and then you're doing your craft. And so you know, I think that's something important, and people, I think, you know, will look up to that, because I think social media kind of skews like what we think of people, because it's like we already know people, but we don't even know people, we don't even physically actually know them, you just follow them on social media. So you don't know if that's really what that person is like. It's just how they want you to be, how they want to be, they want to portray themselves.
Right.
So if that is the way you are, then, you know, you better make sure that you are portraying yourself in that light, you know, like that's, you know, I guess maybe being an older guy, I just kind of see some stuff on social media and stuff like that. And it's, people can use and abuse it as well as use it as a tool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you got to learn to have that fine line and know, you know, you got to live up to what you're posting.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
I something I have to work on all the time, especially in my social media, or what I post in mine. So
yeah.
It make sense?
Yeah, it's definitely an act. Like, I'm not very good at social media myself. I actually have my kids help me a lot. Like, my oldest boy, he works for my company and does all my marketing. And I was just like, hey, man, like, it takes me so long to figure out a post. And I'm like, could you just help me out? And boom, it's done within like a minute. You know, it's that they grew up with it. So it's a way
different. Yeah. Yep, it's a way different. So yeah. Shane, let's have you plug yourself as we wrap up, and so where people can find you, plug your brand, your company, to plug the events, and where people can reach out.
Yeah, Rad 2.0. We have a website. It's rad2o.ca. And we're on Instagram, Facebook, Rad 2.0. Just basically type that in and it'll come up. And yeah, basically you can find out everything for the events and coaching and what we're up to through those three channels for sure.
You're all over the place. Like you can, if you search your name, like you're all over the place with Red Bull, with racing, back to like 2007, I think is the earliest I found of you. So it's awesome. You're definitely making a presence and I appreciate it.
I've been around for a long time, you know? So. Yeah,
absolutely. So, okay, buddy, I appreciate your time. It's been great.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. If you enjoyed it, then let us know by subscribing and leaving us a review. We actually pick a winner each month and give away some awesome prizes just to show our appreciation. Oh, and don't forget, go visit theactionsportspodcast.com to grab yourself a copy of the Action Sports Guide, where you'll learn more about how to land sponsorships, get paid, and turn your passion of riding into a career without having to be a professional athlete. Again, that's theactionsportspodcast.com.